Well, I think first and foremost is that I understand what the role of state legislator is. I know that we do not do what city council does. We have a completely different role in governing, whereas that we are here to serve our district and we're here to serve the state. And then if you're good at your job, you're also helping better the entire city of Minneapolis. And I recognize that, and I won't get caught up in the weeds of city issues when legislating on behalf of my district and the state. I also know that my voice is one that does not currently exist in the Capitol. We don't have any Gen Z queer women of color in the House.
We're rolling. We are rolling.
Calling out. This is a real thing.
None of you have the balls to stop this.
Today.
We're in the Wedge neighborhood right now, 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 right now.
I've had this podcast for a while now, and I've struggled with like the best way to light myself. I do have some lights going on, but my face always looks so shiny, and I know, do I turn it up, turn it down? I've got some overhead lighting here. I don't know. Most people are listening, so I don't think it matters.
I think the best way to find out how to get good lighting for your content is talk to a drag queen. They know better than we do. When I was thinking about starting to dabble in drag last summer a bit, my partner right away bought me a ring light and was like, if you're going to post in drag, you need to have at least this kind of lighting.
Okay. Drag queens of the Wedge, please call in to the Wedge Live tip line and we will have you over to adjust my lighting because I don't think it's going well.
Plug for 61A resident Akira Oni is a great drag queen in district, too.
This is the Wedge Live podcast. I'm your host, John Edwards. My guest today is Isabel Rolfes, who is running for a Minnesota House in District 61A, replacing Frank Hornstein. There are four candidates. I'm talking to all of them. Okay, first question. What do you, me, and the prop comedian Carrot Top have in common? Some biographical detail. Very specific biographical detail that we all have in common.
I don't know if this is aging myself, but I have no idea who Carrot Top is.
You don't know who Carrot Top is?
No.
Wow. Okay. Florida Atlantic University.
Oh, if you would have said Ariana Grande, I would have been on it.
Well, I don't think she went to Florida Atlantic University. True. The three of us are the most prominent alumni of Florida Atlantic University. Three of us. You, me, and Carrot Top. That's going to be a scandal. You did not want to come out of this podcast recording having admitted that you don't know who Carrot Top is, because the demographics for a state legislative race, a lot of older voters who are going to be upset. He's not that old, is he?
I don't know.
You don't know because you don't know who he is. Okay.
Literally no idea. So sorry.
You can have a long journey to go through on YouTube finding out who he is.
Note to self.
He's got red hair. That's why they call him Carrot Top. Okay.
My brain went there. I immediately pictured someone with red hair. So
I'm sorry for starting it off on such a shaky, plausibly hilarious note there. So first real question, Frank Hornstein, public transit champion, chair of the transportation committee, helped pass that historic 3/4 cent metro sales tax for transit, supporter of full-time bus lanes on Hennepin Avenue. Do you endorse that transportation agenda?
I do.
Legacy? Okay. Sorry, I cut you off. Did you want to expound on that?
Nope. I think that was an easy one to just.
Okay, great. Leadership. Can you think of a time you saw a problem in your community and showed leadership to address it?
I think in our community, it's really interesting because we're so split up with the highway there, you know. We have such a range of different ages and things like that. I think one time that I was able to stand up for our community is when I was helping out Councilmember Cashman with her race, trying to think of a way to get young people to not just be excited about a new candidate, but also to like financially be able to support a candidate. So what my roommate and I did is we tried to think of a great way to support this local candidate in a way that would bring in people that aren't normally in the process. So what we did was we just threw a party. We had this party with a DJ. We charged a $25 cover. And that was a way that we were able to get a lot of people that normally wouldn't have touched a political campaign to come and donate $25. And we ended up raising her a good chunk of money that day.
Also, I don't think I introduced you properly because I was so excited about my carrot top joke. So you're the legislative assistant to Minnesota House Majority Leader Jamie Long. That's what I wanted to include. So I have done that for every candidate. Okay, education. I think you've got an extensive list of education priorities on your website. And so can you define the problem for public schools, maybe connect it to Minneapolis, and how you would address that at the legislature?
Yeah, so the first problem with our public schools is that we had Tim Pawlenty as governor, and he slashed our budgets. In this last year, you know, we put $3 billion into education, but as the education chair even says, we can't solve two decades of underfunding with one session. So the number one thing that we need to do with our public school systems is to fund them back up to those levels where they were before the GOP slashed our budget. And then on top of that, we need to work really hard in our next budget cycle to fill those cross subsidies. And then to tie that into Minneapolis schools, a great way to bring that in is that we know that our Minneapolis schools, our public schools in Minneapolis, have some issues with funding. But if the state is able to fill those cross subsidies, that's a much less of a burden to go on the district for spending in education, which would be great help for helping us get out of these budget issues that we're currently having at the Minneapolis public schools. I also, when talking about education, want to center benefits and just the treatment as well of teachers and education support staff and just all the other staff that make schools run like the way they do, making sure that they have a louder voice at the table when getting their benefits. We know that Minneapolis public school teachers are being paid, what is it, the 80, 70, 65 percentile of most teachers in the rest of the state, which is why we're seeing so many teachers not be able to stay despite loving their profession. It's hard to stay somewhere that pays you 60% when you can move out of district and get paid that rate that's more livable. So it's really important that we get our teachers' wages, our education supports professional wages, and those auxiliary school support staff, those wages that we need. And then when we're talking specifically inside of the schools, it's one of those things where our kids need to feel that love, and it's really important that our teachers feel the love from the government so they have as much capacity as they can to give that to our students. For me, I had teachers that would pull me aside in class when they knew I was having a tough time at home, and they were some of the first trusted adults I had in my life to really confide in and have really hard conversations. And I know that that's not just me, and I only have that experience myself. People have that with teachers every day. And then when we're talking about kids in our schools, it's really important to note that we have queer, two-spirit, non-binary and trans kids in our schools everywhere, and they are begging for us to keep them safe. We cannot have an experience like what we saw with Next Benedict happen in Minnesota in our students, and we need to know that they're begging us to keep them safe, and we have to take action to make sure that we can do that in our schools.
So when I think Frank Hornstein, I think transportation. When people think about you, what set of issues will they connect you to?
I think they'll connect me to the issues, like I mentioned, mostly within education and generally trying to bring prosperity with our generations that are coming up. I'd be the only member of the House that's of my generation that has that more close perspective on the younger folks. So my legacy, hopefully, would be someone that's able to work on strengthening the future for the folks coming behind me, as well as keeping our queer population safe and protected and feeling loved in our state.
Do you remember when you called me on the phone?
I do.
Because was that after the caucus or before?
It was before, right?
Was it after? Because now, ooh, I'm a delegate. I think you might have been trying to turn me out to caucus, maybe?
Yep, it was a caucus turnout one. I just pictured it, yep.
Okay, now I'm a delegate. I'm even more important. And so on that call, you led me to believe you know who Wedge Live is. But now that you don't know who Carrot Top is, I'm wondering if that was true.
No, I do. You have to have seen that I've been liking your tweets over the past how many years. I just, like I said to you on the phone, I like to keep the concept of people who are big personalities online as like a concept of an online personality. So when we called on the phone and you were like, I'm Wedge Live, I was like, oh dear, the illusion has been shattered. Now, yeah. I have to confront these people behind the screens are real people.
You have a very, did you refer to yourself as personable on your website? Because that's a good description. It's not just, you're not just blowing smoke. Very friendly telephone voice that you have. And welcoming.
Oh, thank you. I don't know if you've ever seen New Girl before, but I had to think of myself like Winston when he's on the phone. It feels like he has a little more confidence, and I hope that you felt that, I guess.
And it doesn't feel forced. Some people, Are you pained by having to make all of these phone calls?
No, actually at work, people will stop by and ask how things are going. I just keep telling them that I'm having so much fun. And they're like, even with delegate calls, those are the hardest ones to make. And I'm like, why wouldn't I like to spend time talking to people who know about issues that I care about? It's awesome, you know?
Do you say they're hard to make because you're reaching people who have a lot of opinions and a lot to say, and so they could throw you curveballs?
I guess that must be what they're talking about, but it's also like what you expect. I've worked on enough campaigns now to know kind of what the candidates can expect in that sense. So I expected that, you know, doing call time now is me very different than it was when I was doing call time for the race that I was managing, you know, like there's just more of an interest to talk directly to the candidates. So I've been taking that with a lot of happiness and understanding that people are just genuinely curious, which is great.
So we're going to talk about the 2040 plan legislation at the legislature right now. Do you support the bill currently being debated that would fix the Minnesota Environmental Rights Act so it can't be used against comprehensive plans like the 2040 plan?
Yeah, I was actually in the Environment Committee today when they were doing that bill hearing. Councilmember Cashman was in and she went to the wrong building. So I went outside and was like, nope, House representatives are this way. So I showed her to the hearing room and stayed in there for the most of it. I had to head back to my desk to do some other work. But yeah. Any bill that Cindy Jordan's carrying is a great bill. You know, she's an amazing rep.
Some more bills at the legislature that would legalize fourplexes, duplexes in cities, depending on how big they are, density bonuses for affordability and sustainability in how those buildings are constructed. There's another bill to eliminate parking minimums statewide. Are those the kind of things you could get behind?
Certainly, yeah. I actually had a great conversation just yesterday about that. And this morning about that Larry Kraft bill, which I think is the one that you're referring to, that kind of missing in the middle bill, more homes for Minnesota one. Yeah, I think that bill's great. I think that we need to have more of that affordable housing. We need to have it available in other areas besides just Minneapolis, who's been able to pull down some of those exclusionary zoning policies. And then the second one you brought up was the parking, and I also would be behind that legislation.
Traffic enforcement cameras, another bill at the legislature currently, a good idea?
I think it is. I watched Representative Censor Murrah present that bill. I had committee after her, so I popped in during her presentation, and I liked what I heard. I've been hearing from constituents on the staff side when I've been seeing my members' inboxes, whether it be Majority Leader Longs or when I worked for Representative now Chair Acom or Chair Richardson. I saw in their inboxes there were constituents then that also were concerned about people that would speed through lights and things, so it's certainly worth looking at. And I don't think that those fines are crazy either, so I think it is a good thing to stand behind.
Revitalizing Minneapolis. What are the state policy levers you can push to reinvigorate commercial areas like uptown and downtown?
Yeah, so one thing that I'm really interested in exploring as far as commercial spaces and just vacant spaces in general is having a conversation at the legislature about things like vacancy taxes. That also kind of trickles into some potential housing stuff. But when we have vacancy tax on those businesses, you know, that have those open storefronts, it gives us some incentives to have businesses go there. Also, at the state level, we can unlock funds. I've had a meeting with Downtown Improvement District folks, and it sounds like they really want to get the skyways going. I share that sentiment. And really doing what we can with economic development down there. I know that we have a Rise Up Center hopefully coming soon for more job training, which is great as far as economic development that way. But if we're talking just downtown, I think one thing that we can really do with the legislature is do some work to invest in the skyways and get life going there. Because I don't know if you remember or if you were around much in downtown at the time when the Super Bowl was in town, but walking through the skyways and down Nicollet during that time was like a dream. And I don't think the community's still here to put things on like that. I think that we just need as a state to incentivize it and to allow it.
I'm curious what we can even do about the skyways because I don't work downtown, but when I have been downtown during working hours, it's kind of a crush of people. It's very alive. And if it's outside those very few like lunchtime hours, there's nothing there. So I wonder with the work population having gone away as people discover work from home, like how do you save the skyways?
Yeah, I think that has to do a lot too with this. All these things are so intertwined, you know. I think it's really important that if we have the skyways and we have that conversation, it's having people there outside of those 9 to 5 work hours. And that means also revitalizing the downtown or the nighttime economy in downtown, which means that for a lot of those gig economy workers, we have to make sure that we have transit available at night so that they can get home safely and accessibly that way. I think that's a really important step too, as we're talking about skyways and knowing that when it's not within the standard 9-to-5, 8-to-4 work hours, that there are still folks that are willing to be up there and doing business.
Is there a bigger role for the state legislature to play on homelessness? Because here in Minneapolis, we're struggling with the city pointing to the county and saying, well, they have the social services budget. It's their job to do this. And it feels like no one is taking ownership of encampments and how to get people housed. Like, is there anything you can do if elected to help?
Yeah. For so many of these city issues, it's tough at the state level to really want to do a lot of policy work in it because we don't want to preempt the cities and we don't want to like override local control. So a lot of times for issues like this, it has to do a lot with funding that we can send. We put a lot into housing last year, but I think that come the next budget, I know I said we've put a lot into education, but we also have to put a lot into our housing and our homelessness. You know, it's also not something that I'm going to ignore that a lot of our homeless friends in Minnesota are folks that are queer and BIPOC. So as we're talking about the homelessness issue and everything, and we're talking about building capacity and sending funds to shelters to have bigger capacity to upkeep them, to build new ones, we also have to make sure we're not forgetting the conversation of having spaces that are culturally safe for our unhoused friends and spaces that are have gender-neutral facilities for our friends who might be non-binary, two-spirit, or trans, or just maybe need that extra privacy as well. But at the state level, we just need to invest a lot of money in capacity of beds, but also in those rehabilitation services that might be needed to help folks as they are in these shelters and help preparing them to enter the real world again.
Did you know you're the only candidate who has called me? You can tell I'm stuck on this. They're taking me for granted. All of the rest of them are taking me for granted, or they think I'm not worth it. Do you have anything to say about that? You don't have to say anything about that, but something I've noticed.
I say that every vote matters and every call matters. So I'm happy that I made my call to you.
Putting in the work. The other candidates need to call me. I guess I've been emailing with them, so maybe they thought it wasn't necessary.
No, it's interesting because talking to you in this capacity, we're talking the Wedge Live capacity, but if I end up calling you again, it's going to be in a very different, with a different hat on, you know? Like, I think that's still important, despite us knowing your public persona, to also personally make that connection.
They call me the Carrot Top of Minneapolis, but you don't get that reference.
No, the only reference that I get is if you're circling back to about 15 minutes ago.
So what are people telling you on the phone? Since you have your finger on the pulse, you're making all these calls. What are the big issues? Is it public safety? What do they want to know from you?
I mean, it varies precinct to precinct on what the most heard issue is. But if I'm kind of just going to do like an aggregate of all that I've heard, you're right on the pulse there. Public safety is a concern for a lot of folks in the district. Climate has been a big thing for a lot of folks in the district. And economic recovery has been really big for folks in the district. They want to know what my plan is to bring uptown and bring downtown to prosperity, to have these storefronts open and the foot traffic up again. People are really having an appetite for that to return. Also, a lot of people are asking me about really city-specific issues, but that's fine. They want to just get to know me as a person, and that's right. And that's totally fair game.
But those very local issues, it's like when people bring up potholes to their congressman in D.C. Do you have to explain to people you're not running to be the strong mayor? You're actually running to go to the legislature?
No, but that I don't even know if that messaging would be a good idea.
It would upset people.
Probably. Yeah, no, I'm trying, like you said earlier, like I'm personable and I really am that kind of way. So on the phone, if people say things where I'm like, that's not my jurisdiction, I just leave with kindness. You know, I'm like, sorry, that's not what we do. But if we're seeing issues, you know, the state can always step in to help. But I have no interest in stepping on the council's toes.
Try a couple of days of just telling people on the phone's not my job.
Well, it's interesting because that also happened more in the beginning when I was doing those turnout to caucus calls and post-caucus calls pre-convention, which is the phase that I'm in now. In that pre-phase, you know, it was a lot of people asking those specific issues, but I've had a lot of people now when I've asked what matters to them, they're like, we know this isn't your problem. And then they go off on city issues. And I'm like, that's awesome that you're recognizing that. But then they go on to actually ask state legislature questions. Sometimes people just want to be heard, and I'm happy to hear them.
So here's a campaigning question. You've been involved in other campaigns. Do you like the caucus process of calling delegates, or do you like the like general election wider universe? Like everyone is fair game then, or do you like that limited universe of people that you can just drill down on?
I like the more of the process of the holistic getting everybody out instead of just a couple folks, not the couple in our district, 300 plus, but a lot of those folks who are just tuned in to the problem or to the convention and the caucus process, I kind of feel like sometimes our lower income and our disproportionately affected folks, you know, don't know about these processes. And that's kind of an access, a barrier to access to being a part of our democracy. Though despite, like, when we're in the convention process, it is very exciting. It's very much of, like, a hustle and a rush to do all of this. But, no, I have a little bit of qualms with that for sure, because it's really hard to reach out to folks and have to have some folks are like, oh, I'm just going. I don't even need to hear anything about it. But then some folks who are really like, I've never even heard of a process, and I've been voting DFL or this process, and I've been voting DFL my whole life. Like, I just didn't know this existed. Like, I have plenty of friends who are strong DFLers, but don't participate in their caucuses because they just don't get that outreach.
This is going to be unfair because I haven't asked any of the other candidates this, but like, do you think caucuses, conventions, that whole endorsement process we have now are good? Should we keep it, get it, do away with it, replace it? Because I kind of recognize there are some really bad aspects of it, some of which you've referred to, but I think it's better than not having it. Like, it allows an upstart, renegade, a low, not very well-financed campaign to get a foothold in a way that you couldn't just show up at a primary or general election and have.
Yeah, no, that's a fair point, too. I think that if we were going to talk about changing this process, it would have to be changed at a really big scale. It would require, I think, a lot of party resources to cast that net that it's kind of up to the candidates to cast now. I think that if we wanted to have our convention and caucus processes be as open, kind of like you and I are alluding to, that we hope that they could be, it would require, I think, the DFL party to invest its significant funds in outreach ahead of time. And not to say that I'm not for that, I just don't know if that's like a feasible request for me to be saying out loud on The Wedge Live, or if that's even possible, if anyone else has ever brought that kind of thing up. But I don't think that any candidates who are just entering the race and trying to get the caucus process together have the capacity that the party does to really reach out to everyone just to get them to the caucus, let alone explain to them the supporting and everything like that.
I realize why that's such a deeply unfair question, because you are currently seeking the endorsement in this process. It's a backdoor way of me asking, will you abide by the endorsement, which I'm not asking. I think that's a dumb question mostly. So don't answer that.
No worries.
Did you say what you can do on public safety? We alluded to it a little bit, but like, give me your ideas. What are you telling people on public safety?
Yeah. So what I've been telling people on public safety is I kind of have a two-pronged approach. The first one is the very obvious answer, which is continue what the legislature is doing and sending public safety aid directly to the city of Minneapolis. We sent $30 million, I want to say, to the city to spend on public safety, which is great. I think that we should continue to send those funds to the city. But my second prong approach is that it is impossible to ignore that within our district, there are varying opinions of police and policing. And me personally, as someone who has been racially profiled by an officer, but who has also been helped by an officer when I needed it, I understand both of the views of I want officers around to protect me, and also I don't know that I feel safe around them. So to try to like get to everyone's happy place here, what I want to do when elected is work really closely with the post board to monitor the implementation of their affirmative action plan, to see and really dig into it with them and say, like, have you seen any successes in this? Have you seen any things failing? Has anything come out of this besides just, you know, saying that it's going to happen? Because I think that before we can really have the conversation about having a lot of more police everywhere, we need to make sure that our communities feel safe around police. And though we do have a chunk of our district who really would like to see more, we do have a chunk who is also has that fear built in, and I don't think that they're wrong for that. So I really want to make sure that as a legislator, I'm doing what I can at the state level, which is not directly, you know, what the council does and the mayor does with MPD, but to work with that training and at the root of the issue to kind of get out those systemic issues that we see in policing, and then to come back to community and tell them what I've been seeing and report to everyone so that they know if these plans are working. And then also in those things, if I'm telling them what's not working, solicit that input from community. And if they have any ideas, for me to bring that to the post board.
Okay. You know what the problem with DFL candidates in Minneapolis is? You all sound the same. No one can tell the difference. Everyone's got the same buzzwords on their website. So, Isabel, now is your chance to tell us what is uniquely suited about you for this job. What are we getting with you that we don't get from the others? Go.
Yeah, certainly. Well, I think first and foremost is that I understand what the role of state legislator is. I know that we do not do what city council does. We have a completely different role in governing, whereas that we are here to serve our district and we're here to serve the state. And then if you're good at your job, you're also helping better the entire city of Minneapolis. And I recognize that, and I won't get caught up in the weeds of city issues when legislating on behalf of my district and the state. I also know that my voice is one that does not currently exist in the Capitol. We don't have any Gen Z queer women of color in the House. The only Gen Zer we have is a Republican, and I don't know about the other Gen Zers out there, but I'm not comfortable with only one Gen Zer being Republican speaking for our entire generation there. And I know that with my entire life, I was always that kid that said I wanted to be president when I grew up, and I was shocked when kids got older and decided they didn't want to do that. I've just always had a yearning to serve people, to hear from them, and to help with them to solve these solutions to problems that we're facing every single day. And with my background, growing up in rural Minnesota, I'm adopted from India. I have two white parents, a white brother, grew up in incredibly white spaces where I was always the minority around. I've learned to understand what it's like to have a different opinion than everyone in a room and how to speak up for yourself. But I've also learned how to understand people's struggles that are a lot different than mine. And that comes into play really well in our district as we really embody what it means to be the DFL Big Tent Party. We have folks on all sides of that DFL spectrum. But for me, someone who grew up with a lot of folks that were just not even close to the DFL spectrum, this entire party is an incredible safe space for me, which is why I've loved to operate it in the past 6 years. And with that experience, you know, I've worked really hard to maintain and grow our majorities on the ground, organizing, managing campaigns. In my past three sessions of the legislature now, I've really understood what the process is, who to get involved early on your bills to make sure they're implemented, and how to connect with agency staff in that drafting stage to make sure that your impact of your bills do match that intent.
Who is the Gen Z Republican? Do you know who that
Elliot
is?
Elliot Engen.
How old is he?
He's like within 2 years. He's got to be within only 2 years of me because otherwise you're a millennial. So 27 tops.
Okay. Hey, can I get partisan for a moment? I bet Elliot knows who Carrot Top is. What do you think?
You know what? Elliot Engen serves on the Rules Committee, which is I'm a staff on that committee, and he is very kind to me every day. So I'll throw you a bone and say, sure, he certainly knows who Carrot Top is.
You should try to do a gotcha question on him. Ask him who Carrot Top is. See if there's a partisan difference on feelings about Carrot Top, or at least awareness of Carrot Top.
And controlling for age, this is a very interesting research method we're putting together.
Yeah. Gen Z, Republicans, and Democrats, who is more likely to know who Carrot Top is?
Oh, we could also ask Senator Mohammed since she's a Gen Zer too.
Okay. Yeah, I bet she knows who Carrot Top is. You might be the odd person out here. Mm. Final question. Do you have a recommendation for the audience? This could be a hobby, something you enjoy that you think other people will enjoy. It could be a place that you like to go, a book, a movie. Anything that people can experience that you would recommend?
Just in general?
It could be anything.
Hmm.
Something honestly, fun.
Yeah. Honestly, whenever I am feeling like I need to get out, and when I'm sitting in my room for too long and working too hard, one thing that I always get out and do that I find really fun is I'll try to go down to the lake and just sit there, and then every person that walks by, I just ask, can I pet your dog? And then before you know it, my dopamine is full.
Oh. You are the kind of person who asks to pet people's dogs. What about cats?
But I always say thank you.
Well, of course you say thank you. You can't pet someone's dog and not say thank you. What about cats? You see any cats on leashes out there?
I don't see any cats on leashes, and I'm also allergic to cats, so I probably would refrain from doing too much petting.
Hmm. You could be allergic to cats but not dogs? I thought it was either you're allergic or you're not.
I don't know. My girlfriend has two dogs, and they're around me all the time, and I'm not sniffly, and then my friends who have cats, I have a terrible time.
And we're talking about Lake of the Isles, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Sorry to be an allergy truther on you. I didn't mean to question your allergies.
It's okay. I think I might be allergic to mint, too, but who knows?
Mint. Well, you're very efficient, Isabel. You're very professional. We got through this super quickly, and here we are at the end, so thank you.
Thank you for having me. This is great. Again, bum to personify you, but other than that, this has been an awesome time.
Okay, this is the Wedge Live Podcast. I'm your host, John Edwards. Thank you for listening.
This is a real thing. in the Wedge neighborhood right now, 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 right now.